call the meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. The Representative Tice gets to move the meeting minutes of March 5th, 2013. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Congratulations, Representative Tice, on your first motion. Well done. Next up is Representative Lesh's bill, House File 389. Chair will move House File 389, be recommended pass and refer to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Lesh, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Someone's going to come up and testify for me on this.
Good afternoon.
My name is Dan Leary. I'm the Principal Manager of Government Affairs at T-Mobile. I'm based in Chicago. And I think you all should have some prepared testimony. I'm not going to read from it. I think many of you have probably heard some of this before. The prepaid 911 fees aren't collected the same way that postpaid 911 fees are, and it's been problematic over the years. Some companies are paying it, some companies aren't, some are doing it in different methodologies. So several years back, the wireless industry, retailers, public safety, and legislators at places like NCSL got together, and we drafted some model legislation that would address the problem by collecting the fee at the point of sale. And we've since been working on this legislation across the country. It's passed in 26 states with slight variations one way or the other. It's not exactly what came out of NCSL, but it's relatively close to that. And we think that it provides the most efficient way to collect the 911 fees, provides a more steady and accurate methodology for public safety to collect the fee, the funds, and to project what they're going to be collecting in the future. And we hope that we can pass it here in Minnesota. We've been working on it here for several years. And with that, I can take questions or
each gentleman. Mr. Chair, just by point of clarification, some new members may not be up to speed on this issue. Members, we fund 911 services in the state of Minnesota by a fee on your phone bill. And we're up to, in wireless phones now, we're up to 20% of the market that are prepaid phones. The ones you buy in a little package at Target or the gas station or whatever, where you do not have a bill on which you can charge that tax. So our 911 fees are suffering because of that. It's a diminishing part. We're trying to find a way to solve that problem. Largest entrant in the market, TracFone, was paying what they believe to be an estimated cost up until about 10 years ago, when their lawyer told them this is a tax, as stated by state law, to be imposed upon the consumer, not upon the company. Therefore, their general counsel advised them the company's not paying it. So they stopped paying it. We started losing it. And so that's why we find the situation we're in right now. We're trying to remedy that in order to take care of the 911 fees. Public safety strongly supports this. Law enforcement is behind it to ensure we have adequate 911 support in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Is there additional testimony from either one of you gentlemen? Are there other testifiers that wish to be heard with respect to the bill? There is an amendment in members' packets. It is the A4 amendment. I've got two, actually, that are in the packet. Representative Johnson, my understanding is that they're both yours. Do you have a preference?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to offer the A4 amendment.
All right, the A4 amendment is before us. Representative Johnson, to your amendment.
Members, what this does, this amendment, is creates a special revenue account to be managed by the Department of Commerce for broadband deployment. And this will be a broadband deployment grant program, and it's one of the key recommendations from the broadband task force that just completed its work recently. It creates a program to incent providers to build out in unserved and underserved areas, so it's a true public-private partnership. And the way it works is a 4-cent surcharge will be placed on prepaid wireless transactions. So as you know, broadband is essential to innovation, to jobs, to economic development, increasingly the primary mechanism for how we get information in this age of ours. And more than 226,000 residents in Minnesota don't have access to broadband. And this is especially problematic in our rural areas. So this amendment, members, attempts to deal with this issue by setting up this public-private partnership through this grant program as recommended by the Broadband Task Force. I'd make a couple additional notes to the amendment itself. With Subdivision 6, where it talks about allocation of funds. If federal funding isn't available for continued mapping of broadband services and gaps, which we currently do and which is kind of a foundation task that needs to be done in order to assess where the service and gaps are currently, $150,000 from that fund would be used to hire a contractor to complete those tasks. That's Connect Minnesota now that's been doing that and probably would be a likely competitor. And then secondly, on line 3.1, you'll notice that at least 25% of the remaining funds must be used to expand broadband service on a wireless platform to areas of Minnesota in which wireless broadband service is available. So the key word there is wireless platform. We're talking there probably fixed wireless or cellular network, something like that, that which is not dependent on wires or cables. So the last mile issue, particularly again in our rural areas where it's difficult to reach people who really need access to broadband, is a problem, and this attempts to address that issue. So with that, members, that's the amendment we have before us.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. To the author, any comments?
Mr. Chair, I don't know a lot about this amendment, and I don't know nearly as much about broadband as Chairman Johnson. This bill has been a collaborative effort attempting to move forward. So I'm nervous about this going on when I just don't know a lot about it. But if I know Representative Johnson, I'm sure that he's done his homework on it. I just don't have enough information right now to say this would be great on my bill, especially when I've been working with folks in other areas.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Lesch. Are there other comments from members of the committee? And I should have asked, is there anyone else who desires to testify? We do have a letter in your file, or it's been passed out from the grocers. Representative Lesch, relative to the retailers, generally, are you aware of whether they support or oppose your bill or are neutral on it? Or Mr. Murphy?
Mr. Chair, we have been working with the grocers, but perhaps testifier can clarify as to the latest conversations.
Okay. Mr. Murphy?
Mr. Chairman, members have... the retailers in Minnesota, the Minnesota Retail Association is neutral on the bill, as they have been across the country. They're provided for 3% of the fee to recover their costs and their overhead to administer the point of sale recovery. The Minnesota grocers are opposed to the bill. We had a conversation with them with Senator Reinhart as early as 2 o'clock this afternoon. And Senator Reinhart directed them to come back with some hard costs as to what the total cost would be to implement this program. And their primary concern is smaller establishments that may not have the appropriate equipment to make an easy change.
Okay.
So we are on an ongoing basis working with the grocers to try to come to a resolution satisfactory to them.
Thank you. Anything else relative to the A4 amendment? And I support it, and I appreciate Chairman Johnson's efforts to try to work out that issue. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Other testimony, ma'am, are you waiting in the wings to be heard on the bill?
Yes.
Or both of you? Well, come on down. Thank you. Mr. Leary, thank you. And if you just state your name and proceed.
My name is Jackie Mines. I am the director of the Emergency Communication Networks Division, which collects the 911 fee for public safety emergency communication networks. And
Jim Franklin, Minnesota Sheriff's Association Executive Director.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the concerns that we have are of possible unintended consequences. The 911 fee, once it gets past a dollar, and associated fees, sometimes from a public perception, they look at all of those fees together and don't differentiate them. So we are concerned about the public outcry on the phone bill and the possible negative effect that it might have on the 911 fee, which funds the 911 dispatch centers.
Okay, thank you. And sir?
Yes. I'm sorry. If point of clarification, we're just speaking of the amendment only.
All right. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Franklin, for the record, very quickly, to the amendment only, we are concerned, again, as Jackie has already outlined, with regards to public reaction and or the potential downturn or reaction to perceived additional taxes or 911 fees, even though it's not related. So we're just concerned about the perception of how people will view this.
Thank you. And as I understand, the total amount, it will not exceed a dollar, even when all added all together. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, at present it does not, but if we need to raise that fee later on for up to 95 cents, which we have authority to do, we try not to do that unless absolutely needed, but we are embarking on upgrading the 911 network to meet the needs of wireless customers to better locate them. So we do have some concerns that at the point we want to raise it, there, that's when it would be difficult for us to do so.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this just, again, the issue of changing technology is going so fast, we have a difficult time keeping up to it and providing the services. So we need to work collaboratively together. We're just concerned as to what the perception will be of the public.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Franklin. Representative Johnson.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is Mr. Franklin, just to be clear, it's just on prepaid wireless, just so you understand that.
I do, sir.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Franklin. Anyone else desires to testify? Any other questions from members? Seeing none, now we have the bill before us. Representative Lesher renews his motion that House file. Then the chairman will renew his motion that House file 389 be recommended to pass and refer to the House Taxes Committee as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Lesher. Have a good afternoon. Next up is House file 573. Representative Ward's bill, and I believe he is here. At least I know he was here.
He is here.
The chair will move that House File 573 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. Representative Ward, welcome to the committee. It's nice to have you back.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Representative Ward, as soon as you're ready, you may proceed. And Representative Ward, as we're getting ready for that, my understanding is that there is an author's amendment, the A1. Is that indeed an author's amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, A1 is my office amendment, correct?
All right. Well, as is tradition in the House Commerce Committee, we put bills in the shape that the authors desire to proceed. The chair will move the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposing? None. That motion carries. Representative Ward, to your bill then as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Members, House File 573, otherwise known as the Statewide Health Insurance Pool for Education Employees. Yeah, I'm asking you today to consider supporting and helping get this passed to solve a healthcare crisis for our school employees. Members, House File 573 provides a solution for rising healthcare premiums, huge out-of-pocket expenses, very high deductibles, and even total elimination of healthcare insurance for some school employees. Members, I am a former educator of 34 years. Most of you know that, and those that don't do now. I also was a negotiator at table negotiator in two different districts. And members, as negotiator, we always had problems with the health care part of our negotiations of our contract. And so, Mr. Chair, House File 573 really is a tool to make sure that health care coverage can be provided to all school district employees in the state of Minnesota. And you're going to hear some testimony about that, Mr. Chair, so I won't go into that. But members, those especially new members, the statewide educators' health insurance has passed both bodies three times in the past with very, very broad bipartisan support. It was vetoed three times by the then governor, but members, it had broad bipartisan support over the past three times that it passed. Members, it passed because legislators saw and believed that significant savings due to a large purchasing pool could then be used by school districts for children's learning opportunities. Members, I'm going to leave the testimony up to my testifiers, my witnesses, and I'd just like to give you a little more information about the bill itself, Mr. Chair. So I'm going to just highlight some points about the bill and then turn it over to my testifiers. Member, a House File of 573 uses a public employee insurance program as the vehicle for a mandatory statewide insurance pool that will cover more than 200,000 school employees and their families. PEEP is managed by the Minnesota Management and Budget Department, which also manages the state employee group insurance program called CEGIP. The prior state school employee health insurance bills have created a separate autonomous group pool for school employees under the PEEP insurance program. This change was at the request of MMB, so the new language is amended into the existing PEEP statute rather than creating a new program. Members, House File 573 would continue local control. School districts and local unions would continue to collectively bargain cost sharing for premiums and out-of-pocket expenses, eligibility requirement, and other health arrangements, such as wellness programs, health reimbursement accounts, health savings accounts, and flexible spending accounts. House File 573 changes where school districts buy their health insurance. Rather than have over 330 individual school districts each taking time and money to hire insurance consultants to get insurance bids, examining the bids, and making decisions about where to get their insurance, the work will be done for them. They simply get their insurance from PEEP. Members, it is an effective, efficient use of taxpayer dollars, and it provides more transparency. It establishes, members, the House File 573 establishes a labor management committee composed of equal number of union and employee representatives to work with the Commissioner of Management and Budget on major decisions affecting the insurance program and to study benefits, utilization, quality, and other issues. The committee, the Labor Management Committee, and the Commissioner must jointly agree to changes in the plan design. Now, the governance structure, members, will have seven labor and seven management representatives on the board. House File 573 requires participation by school districts that provide health insurance or make contributions toward employees' purchase of health insurance. State district participation will begin January 1st of 2014. And members, right now in the state of Minnesota, there are 12 school districts that do not provide insurance for their teachers. House File 573 allows self-insured districts with 1,000 or more insured lives to opt out if the exclusive rep and the school board mutually agree. If they decide to opt out, they would not be able to join the pool for 4 years and may be rated separately
for 4 years if they join the pool. Mr. Chair, that's some pieces of the bill that I wanted to bring forward to you, but I do want to say that a larger pool makes premiums more competitive, provides better bids for insurance policies and premiums, and would provide school district employees, some of them in the state of Minnesota that don't even have insurance right now, the opportunity to have insurance, comprehensive insurance, quality insurance in the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn my to the testifiers now. They are with me today, and I'll start out by introducing Kimberly White.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Ms. White, welcome to the committee. And in light of the, and I suspect the testifiers are already aware of this, there are a number of people that want to be heard on the bill, so this isn't directed solely at you. But if folks have just a minute or two worth of comments, that would be ideal so that we can at least get through everybody that's taken the time to come here today. So Ms. White, welcome to the committee. Proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Hi, Mr. Chair, and hi, everyone in the committee. My name is Kimberly White, and I'm currently an employee with Minneapolis Public School, and I currently work as an associate educator. And I'm just here to explain my situation as an employee that supports statewide health insurance program for public school employees. I have had some tough decisions to make due to dramatic increase in insurance costs through my job. I'm a mom that has to pay half of my income for me and my daughter just to have insurance coverage. I feel it's a true and huge struggle that I work strictly for health care costs and expenditures. I've had to leave grad school, which I'm four classes away from completing my master's in special education due to the fact of the cost of health care currently, to pick up a second job just to serve as supplemental income. I currently pay out my check a month, $1,112, strictly for health care for me and my daughter, which equates to $556 biweekly, so it allows me only to bring home from that job working for Minneapolis Public School $443 after deduction every week, biweekly. So I've been left with no options as a single mother with a child that has two pre-existing conditions, which is diabetes and asthma, to carry the health care costs and expenditures. I think I have to speak for many that's having to make these tough choices, that it's a clear injustice to have a person such as myself and others work in public education sector to be put in these situations with our backs against the wall with limited options for health care, leaving me not to have any insurance coverage for leaving some not to have insurance coverage for any family members or themselves. I struggle daily with the choice to leave this area of work and explore other opportunities that could offer better health care options for me and my daughter. This is clearly a frustrating predicament for me. However, I'm asking you to listen not just to my story, but of others that are left with these enormous decisions and pass the statewide health insurance bill as an option to help stabilize the cost and afford many the opportunity to afford health care costs. This will allow many to have the accessibility not just to work for health care, but also to work to provide for their families. And I appreciate you all taking out time to listen to my story.
Thank you, Ms. White. We appreciate hearing it. Yes, sir. Welcome to the committee. If you'd just state your name at the outset and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman of the committee. My name is Kent Mulberg. I'm an educator from Detroit Lakes. With me today is my wife, Patty, in the top row there. She's also an educator from Detroit Lakes. You're going to hear repeatedly about the extreme costs of health care. In the 28 years I've been in education, it was consistent that we saw increase in the rates of 10% annually. 3 years ago, our district made the courageous move to go to PEEP, and since then, our health care costs have stayed at a very reasonable rate, and we're very, very happy with that. Some school districts are being forced to drop health care. I'm a negotiator in my hometown, and it's tough to see that happen. Our board presented us with that strategy. We can do much better. We ask you to pass the statewide health insurance bill. But there's more to this story than health care costs. There's more to it. And that's what the story I'm going to tell you right now is. This is my son. His name is Joel Mulberg. He's a student at the University of North Dakota, and he plays football. And one of the issues you're going to hear is that people are going to receive not as good a care if statewide health insurance is passed. And that's exact opposite of the truth. Here's what happened to my son. He was a sophomore in high school playing football. He was a very highly recruited athlete when he developed a back injury, a lower back injury. It was severe, but not enough to make him quit the sport. He played through the season, and we thought he would get better.
He didn't. The end of the season came. He visited every local doctor he could go to. He went through physical therapy numerous times. He had a surgery in which they injected steroids into his, actually right into his spinal cord. We thought he's going to get better, and he didn't. Football ended. Basketball started. He was still able to play basketball, but he was in much, much pain. Finally, it came to the point where he said, Dad, I can't do this anymore. I can't play. So we pulled him from the team, and we thought rest will make it better. Rather than getting better, it got worse. It was at this point that we knew we needed to go to Mayo, or we needed to go to the U of M, or someplace like that. And we feared that with health insurance, we wouldn't be able to do that. And we found through the PEEP referral process that it was extremely easy. Our doctor set up a referral process with Mayo Clinic. Our son went to Mayo Clinic, and with the work of our local doctors and other doctors and the Mayo doctors, we quickly discovered and diagnosed that he suffered from a genetic disorder called ankylosin spondylitis, which is a rheumatoid arthritis that attacks your spinal cord. Very severe thing. Immediately, they began treatment. 5 days later, my son played in a basketball game against the number two team in the state, and he scored 28 points. It was a miracle. We considered it a miracle. And it was because of this process that worked, the referral process. Now my son is able to work with our local doctors, he's able to work with Mayo Clinic, and he's able to work with the University of North Dakota doctors, all under the umbrella of PEEP. And it's been a wonderful thing for us, and as parents, we feel very, very fortunate. Our son was fortunate. He had parents who were educated, who were employed, who were insured. What if we've got people out there who have boys or little girls who have a sore back? That's all we thought it was, a sore back. They go to the drugstore and they'll buy him a Aleve, all right? The Aleve will take away the pain, but it won't cure the problem. Our son was fortunate because of the PEEP process and the PEEP referral process and how it worked. If we have statewide health insurance, we can ensure that all children will have the same opportunities that my son said. So we ask you to support our state educators and not bigger insurers and their profits. The status quo is not working for educators. I've been out there 28 years. I could talk for hours on this if you wanted me to. We can do much better. Please, please pass the statewide health insurance bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mulberg. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
Representative Ward, I see we've got a number of additional testifiers as well, and Ms. Alswager is next, and then on deck is Mr. Hoverman and Ms. Nielsen.
Mr. Chair, I have some handouts. I don't know if we have a page available at this time, but I do have some handouts, so when they come, we'll get
I'll
those distributed. My name is Jan Alswager, representing Education Minnesota. Well, we're asking you to support statewide health insurance for school employees and thank Representative Ward for his hard work on this bill. Our educators want what you have. You have a statewide insurance pool called CGIP. It works because it's mandatory, although we have an exception in our bill. It's mandatory, and because of the statewide nature of the bill, you're able to reduce those and get rid of those huge premium spikes that you hear about. In Malacca, we had a testifier from Malacca, a 50% increase because of the catastrophic illnesses in their district. I want to point you to the local impact note. The local impact note was prepared by the Minnesota Management and Budget at the request of Representative Laura Broad a few years ago because the other side had told her this was going to be more expensive for districts and school employees, and it's not. I ask you to turn to the second page. The backside of the first page. Up at the top right, you'll see the local fiscal impact. That note says that in 2011, it would have saved $10 million, 2012, $23 million, and FY 2013, $60 million. A statewide pool makes you able to create the leverage for drug prices, for negotiating with insurance networks, creating adequate plans that provide a quality product. If you take that number over 10 years, you would save school districts over $1 billion. I encourage you to ask MMB and the people who did this report to come down to show you how, or to talk to you about how we can save school districts a significant amount of money. You may hear today that this bill is going to be mandatory. Education Minnesota has been working on this for a number of years, and we have worked with legislators, we've worked with the opposition to make this work for more people. This bill will not go mandatory, and I am telling everybody here in the audience who's listening, Education Minnesota will oppose an amendment to make it mandatory. We put the opt-out for self-insured with 1,000 or more lives by mutual agreement in to satisfy some of the requests of the individuals. Again, we will oppose a mandatory amendment. I want to just clarify a little bit about some of the competition issues that we hear. You're going to hear that, it's not going to save that much. There isn't that much competition. With a statewide pool, just like CGIP, PEEP will be able to come up with the insurance plans. There will be three plans, and then they will work with the insurance networks to see who wants to bid on that plan. So Medica Health Partners, preferred one, any insurance company that can do business in Minnesota can bid and negotiate for that book of business. It is the ultimate in competition. It's the ultimate in saving money for school districts, and it will provide savings for everyone. Why statewide? One last thing. As I said, our members would like to have a statewide plan like you do. I want you to think about your own plan. Would it make sense for the state office building to have their own insurance plan and the state office building human resources people go out and get a bid for insurance and have the Department of Transportation do the same thing and the Capitol do the same thing and the corrections facility in Stillwater do the same thing? That doesn't make sense. But we have 338 school districts all doing that right now. We think it makes sense to have a very efficient system, save taxpayer dollars, save school districts and the school employees money, and have a very transparent system so that you know exactly what's going on. There's a lot more that I could testify to related to the service co-ops, etc. And Mr. Chair, I know you want to keep the time to keep moving on, and so I am going to stop, and then later if there's questions, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. And Ms. Elswager, just for clarification's sake, as far as the opt-out provision goes, is it correct to say that in Section 1, I've got the summary, which oftentimes reads better than our own drafts, but for those employers that insure 1,000 or more lives on the date of enactment of this, that the school board of the school employer and the union, if they jointly determine that they don't want to be in this, they don't have to be in this. Is that correct, Representative Ward?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And then it's further my understanding that it permits school employers to opt out if the total of self-insured lives is under 1,000 insured lives. Is that also correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct as well.
Would you repeat the question,
Mr. Chair? I'm just reading from the... I wanted to make sure that our summary is... permits school employers to opt out only if the total of self-insured lives after applying, there's clauses 2 and 4, is no more than 1,000 insured lives.
Mr. Chair, members, the bill... I didn't look at the summary. But the bill language states that you may only opt out if you are a school district with 1,000 or more self-insured lives and that there is mutual agreement between the exclusive representative and the school board.
Okay,
if you are fewer than 1,000, no.
And I appreciate that clarification because we, and many of us received the House research draft, which I believe is still correct, but it references a couple of of prior clauses in it, and I just wanted to make sure that there was clarity relative to members' understanding. With that, we've got Mr. Hoverman and Ms. Nielsen. If you could come down, I'd appreciate it.
So, Mr. Chair, may I ask a question while they're coming
down?
Certainly,
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, if I'm looking at this, and I apologize, on 4.8, subdivision G under section 3, anybody that's under 1,000 employees, the language says in the bill, a school employer that makes available health insurance coverage for employees, on and on, must purchase health insurance coverage through the program. So, if I'm reading the bill correctly, to your point earlier about over 1,000, if it's under 1,000, everybody, according to the language I'm reading, everybody has to buy health insurance through PEEP. Is that correct, Representative Ward?
That is correct. I misspoke when I didn't quite understand Representative Atkins' question to start with. The only ones that can opt out are 1,000 insured lives and more, self-insured, and the exclusive rep and the management, school board management agree to that. Anybody with less than that must buy through PEEP. Did I clarify that?
You did. Thank you, Representative Ward, and thank you, Representative Hoppe, for that clarification. With that, I assume you're Mr. Hoverman. Or Hoverman. Welcome to the committee. If you just identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, it's Dan Hoverman, and I'm a superintendent of the Mounds View Schools.
Thank you.
I'm joined by Carol Nielsen, our director of finance. We would like to speak briefly in opposition to House File 573. Our basic concerns are that we feel as though the local control issue should be taken into account very seriously. In other words, that there should be the local decision making about whether or not districts would choose to participate in PEEP, and that there shouldn't be any conditions attached to that. That should be an individual district decision. The other problems that we see with PEEP are that some of us have been working very hard. In our district, for example, we've made significant progress in controlling health care costs. Our concern, if you look at this bill, is that there's a risk of winners and losers. Carol will speak in a moment to the fact that I believe you have some information from us that it'll actually cost us more. If we were to go in this direction. The other factor that we're very concerned about is the impact potentially of the Affordable Care Act. And we think that the context of that, the timing of that also introduces a variable that we certainly don't know yet what the impact of that might be. So, again, we feel that in our district that we have gotten more and more sophisticated over time, both our unions and our negotiating teams to find paths to go through this. We found ways to encourage our staff to take increased responsibility for their health care, and we feel that's beginning to trend in a very positive direction to addressing some of the underlying causes of increasing health care costs.
Thank you, Dr. Hoverman. And Ms. Nielsen.
Good afternoon. Carol Nielsen, Finance Director at Mounds View Schools. You should have a single sheet from Mounds View Public Schools. I'm not sure if it was passed out. But what Mounds View has is we've got 1,200 insured members. We are currently working with health partners. We've got 2,600 insured lives, so we're a very large organization. And as Dan had mentioned, we've worked very collaboratively with our bargaining units to make sure that we can control those costs and maintain benefits that are acceptable to our employee groups. And so the sheet that's going around just gives you a little bit of demographics of our organization. And when we entered our negotiation with contracts for the 2011-2013 contract year, we did, in fact, receive a price bid quote from PEEP, and we compared those side by side. And so in that handout that you're seeing, you can see the cost that Mounds View incurred for our benefit plan. We incurred, across all of the benefit options, a total pool annual cost of $15.1 million. And at the same time, the PEEP quote that we had received for that same period would have cost us $15,466,000. So it was an increase in cost for us to look at the PEEP program, along with the fact that the third box, and that shows some of the comparative benefits. We would have seen a loss in benefit, aggregate benefit, and at the same time, we would have lost some controls, the pieces that we put in place negotiating with our bargaining units to do some cost savings would have been basically undone by looking at the PEEP program. And so I think, as Dan had mentioned, the ability to work collaboratively with our groups and find the best plan that works for our organization and our employees, I think, is the best way to control costs, to put a statewide pool together and ensure that people are going to work hard to save those dollars. I don't know necessarily it's going to work. So that's kind of Moundsview's data in a snapshot.
Thank you both very much. We appreciate you taking the time for us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And next up looks also like a team from the Burnsville Egan Savage School District, Lisa Ryder and Stacy Sylvine. And whoever wants to kick it off, if you just identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony. And welcome.
Good afternoon, Board. Committee Chair, committee members, my name is Stacy Sylvine. I'm the HR director for the Burnsville School District. Lisa Ryder is the director of business affairs. Just to give you a little bit of context for the district, we have 9,500 students. On average, 1,250 members are covered out of the 1,300 members that are benefit eligible within our district. We have over 2,900 members, spouses, and children covered under our plan as it currently is written. Over the past 10 years, the fully insured family coverage premium has increased an average of 6%. Okay. Over the last 3 years, our employees have worked to decrease cost by an average of 4.5%. We have a blended coverage model that includes a HRA, a 105 reserve, and a fully funded insurance plan beginning at $10,000. However, our employees have zero out-of-pocket expenses except for the copay for pharmaceutical. Okay, there are many areas of our budget where we do not have much control. However, in the area of employee benefits, we believe we can make the largest difference at the local level. Our employees have demonstrated that we can address our claims and insurance costs through collaboration, education, and wellness incentives. Our research in the past year has led us to seriously contemplate self-funded insurance as an option to further increase our control over expenditures and plan design to manage insurance costs over time. Our district, with only 2,900 lives insured, is able to predict and adjust for claims. This has allowed us to create a layered approach, allowing much of the savings over the past 3 years to stay in the hands of our employees and to increase student programs. I'll turn the rest over to Lisa.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvan. Ms. Ryder.
So our objective in our district is obviously to maintain as many options as possible to continue to control costs. And controlling costs locally allows us to provide more programming opportunities for our students in our community. The concerns with this bill is the option to choose this plan should continue to be as it is under Minnesota Statute 43A.316. It should not be forced upon school district employees. In our district to date, that Minnesota statute has not resulted in any employee group accepting or even seriously considering PEEP offerings, as they have not compared to the value received by our employees with the plans that are otherwise available to them. The anticipated reserve surcharge is an added expense for our district. In partnership with our employees, we have already worked to develop a 105 reserve. Under the statewide health plan, the local incentive and benefit of employee groups to become informed consumers will not be emphasized nor realized. This bill will increase costs for our district, resulting in less budget available for salaries and FTEs in the classroom where they're needed. In our district, our size of 2,900 lives is able to create a predictable and manageable claim trends. It is unnecessary to create a mandated pool that needs to be statewide to accomplish the same predictability. This bill does not allow informed decisions for our district. Rather, it forces a limitation of options that we may choose to limit our insurance costs and maintain benefits as they have been negotiated over the past years. As it's currently written, this bill will close the door on us having a choice to choose self-funding as an option in the future. emphasis should be on maintaining competitive options for informed, educated decisions to be made at the local school district level in cooperation between the employer and employee groups. The P plan may work for some school districts, but not necessarily for all. School districts like ourselves should have the freedom to choose self-insurance in the future as their most effective health insurance choice over a statewide health insurance plan. We thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Ryder, and thank you, Mr. Sylvine. We then have... Yes, Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair, and so how many bodies does, or humans, does Burnsville insure?
2,900.
So I just want to clarify, I miss it, because I was under the impression that over 1,000 was not going to be mandatory. And so if you could clarify to me how that this is going to now totally devastate Burnsville when they have the option to opt out, according to what it was explained to me.
It's a matter of if they're self-insured. Is that right, Ms. Ryder?
Right. We are not currently self-insured.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schoen. That's a good clarifying point. We then have honored to have Mayor Walden, I understand, from Wadena. Us former mayors, Mr. Mayor, we like one another. So welcome to the committee. Thank you for traveling in.
He's ribbing me, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Wayne Walden. I'm the mayor of the city of Wadena, and I don't have enough. My schedule's not busy enough, so I'm also chairman of the board of a Minnesota Service Cooperative, the National Joint Powers Alliance out of Staples, Minnesota. We serve five counties around central Minnesota. Service cooperatives have 23 different services that they do, and it's growing every year. One of those happens to be health insurance. NJPA, I'll refer to NJPA as a service cooperative. 5 years ago, we had a dozen groups that we insured. Now we're up to 29, 15 of which are schools, and three more are knocking at the door wanting to get in. Service cooperatives bid insurance every 4 years. All the service cooperatives do. And as a group, we insure 5,400 persons as a service cooperative. NJPA and other service cooperatives are opposed to this this bill. The proposed bill would mandate the use of PEEP for insurance for school districts with fewer than 1,000 employees. It appears the proposed legislation would exclude regional service cooperatives from continuing the good service of offering insurance. For the city of Wadena, we also participate in a service cooperative insurance pool. We have 40 employees. Our concern is you remove a significant number of those bodies, over 50% of the bodies, from the pool. That will strip the pool, cause adverse selection, and cause increase in pricing. There are multiple options currently available to school districts, cities, and counties to provide insurance for their employees. PEEP, if they are truly the most effective option, an efficient option, they certainly can choose that. There's no reason why they can't. But in the end, it is their choice. I strongly encourage you to remove the language that would make the mandate for removing the smaller districts, specifically using PEEP. It can certainly be an option, but why should it be an option, not the only option, for smaller districts? Would this not be a form of discrimination based upon size? I believe there needs to be equal opportunity for all districts of all sizes to opt out, providing the district is able to provide proof that they provide a comparable solution from other insurance programs. This takes away competition, and it also could eliminate the reserves that the service cooperatives use locally to help even out the highs and lows of insurance costs and those catastrophic incidents. Finally, Mr. Chair, I just want to put in a couple of personal comments. NJPA would welcome an opportunity to meet with those 12 groups statewide who don't have insurance. I think we could offer them good options, as could any other service cooperative statewide. And really, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this problem is not about rates. It's about the pool. It's about contribution. I'm a member of SCGIP. I'm a state employee. And I know when people discuss with me the insurance you have, yes, I have insurance, but it's about the contribution by your employer. So the problem indeed, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, may not really be with the insurance in the pool. It may be about appropriate funding for education in Minnesota. When the single mother was here talking about the amount she pays out of pocket to insure her daughter and herself, that's the bargaining issue. That's not the insurance plan. So we encourage you to reject this House File 573 and keep competition in place and let service cooperatives be part of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Walden. We then have Barbara Cox, and after that, Sam Walseth, Paul Bourgeois, is Ms. Cox, and if Mr. Walseth is going to testify as well, whatever order you all want to come in is fine. I just want to make sure that we don't have the gaps in between. And stop being polite, for heaven's sake. Somebody just testify. You're looking at each other like it's the Minnesota standoff. You know, I mean, we're all just so polite. Mr. Walseth, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's militant modesty is what I grew up with in Minnesota. Sam Walseth, and I represent the Minnesota Service Cooperative. I want to thank Mayor Walden for his comments. I'm here representing a coalition of all 8 regional service cooperative health insurance pools that collectively insure 220 school districts. The 220 district members cover approximately 35,000 school employees, which is roughly one-third of the school employee market in self-insured pools. You're going to hear a lot about self-insuring. On behalf of the pool members, we oppose House File 573 for the same reasons the proponents of the bill testified to, and that is competitive shopping for school insurance works to drive down rates. The educator from Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, talked about his experience in shopping for PEEP. Employees today have the right to enroll in PEEP. And Mr. Chairman and members, if I could turn your attention to line 3.15 of the bill and quote existing statute, Minnesota statute 43A.316 subdivision 5 states, each exclusive representative for an eligible employer determines whether the employees it represents will participate in the program. You don't need the bill today to enroll anybody into PEEP. They can do it today on their own. In the last 3 years, the vast majority of employee groups insured in our cooperative health plans use this statute to get insurance quotes from PEEP. The result? The cooperative pools retain 95% of the employee groups that went shopping. Despite the recent shopping experience by thousands of employees, House File 573 says it doesn't matter. It says the employees don't know what you're doing, and instead the state of Minnesota is going to take over a local insurance program. One of the biggest concerns our pool members have about the state takeover local plans is the high cost of PEEP Minnesota Advantage Plan. The local impact note from MMB was waved around earlier about all the cost savings. If you go all the way back and not just read the headline, Mr. Chairman and members, and get all the way back to where you actually start talking about rates, last page of the MMB local impact note, what you're going to see is that they projected for the PEEP Minnesota Advantage Plan in 2012 that is $1.297 billion for claims paid. Divide that by 824,000 students in Minnesota and you get a figure of $1,574 per pupil for the cost of the PEEP Minnesota Advantage Plan. By contrast, the average cooperative insurance cost in 2012, that same year, was $1,071 per pupil. This is a staggering difference of $503 per pupil. To put that in context, Governor Dayton is proposing $52 per pupil in the basic formula next year. And I know, members, there aren't a lot of you who serve on the K-12 Finance Committee, but for those of you who do, Representative Anzels, Representative Woodard, a couple of them here, we don't see $500 per pupil increases, no matter who's in control, no matter how many taxes you raise. Schools don't see that. And our members can't levy that back fast enough. Pooling has existed for decades. If pooling's what people want, we've got 8 regional pools that have 220 members today. Purchasing efficiencies, I think the comment was made that 330 districts are purchasing on their own. That's not true. 220 districts today operate on a statewide RFP and purchase together. And all the other 100 districts can come in and join that purchasing contract. Representative Ward talked about 12 districts that don't offer coverage. Members, where in the bill does it require anybody to offer coverage? We've been talking about these 12 districts that don't offer coverage for a decade. Thank goodness the ACA is here because it's going to require them to offer some coverage and make some contribution to those employees because they deserve it. But not this bill. You know, Mr. Chairman and members, Ms. Altschwager talked about letting self-insureds opt out at a thousand lives. We've got 35,000 lives in our cooperative self-insured purchasing pools. Why can't they opt out? Why do they have to be forced in and only take the PEEP option? 95% of our employees shopped it, and they don't want it. Why do you have to force them in? We think that's wrong. We think you're picking winners and losers between districts, winners and losers between plans, and we think that's unfair. Mr. Chairman, members, CEGIP's been talked about quite a bit. Don't take it from me, but CEGIP's biannual report 2003-04, when they went self-insured, 23% increase, 21% increase, 13% increase, 16% increase. Over the last 13 years, 126% increase for the CEGIP plan. Spikes. Don't take it from me. CEGIP's annual report. CEGIP has spikes too. Rate increases happen. It does come down to contributions, Mr. Chair and members. That's the issue here. It's that $500 per pupil that's missing. The erosion of education funding over the last decade, that's been the problem. That's been the cause of high deductibles, high out-of-pocket amounts. That's what you heard from the proponents of the bill. Schools do need the funding to help get money back on the bargaining table. But this bill doesn't put money on the bargaining table. It just forces everybody into a high-cost plan they can't afford. Mr. Chairman and members, with that, I'll stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walseth. And we'll be back with questions, but we want to make sure we get everybody who came here to testify. So I see folks, Mr. Griffin is being Minnesota polite again and gesturing towards someone else. Welcome to the committee. If you just identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Atkins. Members, my name is Paul Bourgeois. I'm the Executive Director of Finance and Operations for Minnetonka Public Schools. I'm a licensed CPA. I also am in my 20th year of overseeing self-insured health plans. I'm not going to go over a lot of the details of our plan, and I'm going to try to hit some highlights that haven't been hit yet. But there's several items in the bill that we are concerned with. When I say we, I'm also here representing MASBO, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, and we very strongly oppose the bill in its current form. The plan requires districts under 1,000 lives to be brought into the pool. And you've talked about that a little bit, but the key thing about that is for a district, for example, the size of Minnetonka, we have 1,900 lives. If our teachers decide to go in, the rest of our bargaining units are tied to them like tied to an anchor. We go into the pool with them. And so even though we would have a totally viable self-insured pool with our remaining employees, which would be equivalent about to the self-insured pool that the whole district of St. Francis has, we would have no choice because, as I understand the wording, we'd all be pulled in with that. This bill would be much more equitable. It would also preserve competition if there was an opt-in clause versus an opt-out clause. Every district has the ability, and every bargaining unit has the ability to opt in right now. And if you get to a pool of 10,000 to 15,000 lives, you're going to have significant economies of scale. There are a lot of school districts out there that are doing very well in terms of self-insurance and having similar results to us. Our self-insurance pool in Minnetonka has had an average 3.62% rate increase for the last 11 years. We've only had 1 year of double digits, and we're hoping to have 0% this coming year. So self-insurance works. One of the big reasons that self-insurance works so well is because employees have ownership of the plan. They look at it as an asset, as a benefit that they have to take care of and nurture to keep in good condition. One of the concerns about going into a statewide pool is you'll start having the feeling maybe that it's more of an entitlement, that we're all in the same pool, similar to Medicare and Medicaid. And you can see that those programs are having significant problems with people accessing health care at rates that we are having a hard time keeping up with, both at the federal level and at the state level. So you're taking it away from almost like an ownership for those self-insured organizations and employees for those self-insured organizations and almost turning it into entitlement. So that's a real key difference. Finally, even the amendment that was added this afternoon regarding the need to build up reserves is going to be problematic. In healthcare, cash is king. You need a tremendous amount of cash to pay the claims that are coming through every year. And if all the districts go into this pool on July 1, for instance, there's going to be a flood of claims coming through almost immediately. And I've done some back of the napkin figuring based on the size of our district. We're about 1% of the total employees in the state in terms of overall education, and it requires us to have about 35% to 40% cash reserves to run our pool for about $9.5 million worth of claims. This plan, if everybody goes into it, is going to be an enormous amount of expenses for claims. It's going to be over $1 billion if you scale ours up to by 100 times. So you're going to need $300 to $350 million in terms of liquid cash just to take care of this. Now, the amendment has proposed that would be borrowed from another trust fund. So you will have cash up front, but then it's going to have to be paid back with interest. Well, those dollars to pay that back then are going to come out of any allocations that we get, the $52 per pupil or whatever else is available, over a period of time, whether it's 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 10 years. So that will always be, as one other testifier mentioned, there will always be less dollars then going to be able to pay for teacher FTEs or paraprofessional FTEs for help in the classroom, because our insurance costs will be higher than anticipated. So we're asking you not to take the wrecking ball to the self-insured plans or to competition. You know, the fact that a Detroit Lakes or a Lewiston Altura is getting good rates where they weren't able to before, that is a good thing. And this is a good option for some districts, and we applaud them for looking at that. But if it's an opt-in versus an opt-out, it makes it much less onerous to the districts who are actually already doing well, and you don't create winners and losers. There's just all winners. And finally, I'm just going to ask you, you know, would you ever get into a contract in your personal life or your business lives where you could never get out of the contract? And, you know, with apologies to the Eagles, just because for emphasis, it's kind of like the Hotel California with this bill. You can get in anytime you want, but you can never leave. And that is an issue that is a little bit dangerous, because if these costs start escalating, then we have nowhere else to go. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bourgeois. Mr. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. First time I've been accused of being way too polite, and I'll try and rectify that. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Phil Griffin. I'm a lobbyist representing Preferred One. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and I'm not going to try and repeat the testimony that you've heard from some of the previous opponents of the bill, but we do oppose the bill, and I'm speaking today not only on behalf of my client, but with Ms. Cox and the rest of the members of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans that represent the 7 nonprofit health plans here in Minnesota. And, Mr. Chairman, I would start at the beginning. Cost is what the proponents of the bill have said we need to control, and I couldn't agree with them more. This bill does nothing to control costs. And, Mr. Chairman, I want to go to their second point, which was coverage for all, and you heard Mr. Walseth say it. House File 573 does not mandate that coverage be given to teachers that don't have it right now. Those local units that have governed, worked with their governors in their school boards, have not fixed that in this bill. This bill doesn't say you have to buy coverage. It says those that buy coverage have to buy it through the pool. And, Mr. Chairman, members, I just want to give you a little analogy. My son needed a car when he was heading off to college this year. We decided to give him the old car that I had, which has 198,000 miles on it. It wasn't his choice. Giving him the kind of voluntary choice that we have in this bill, I think he probably would have gone with the Ferrari, because he would have gotten to choose what he wanted. We had to bargain mutually, and that, to me, is not a voluntary system. That's one side or the other gets to choose, and that's not the way you want to make this business work. Mr. Chairman, members, people have already touched, and Paul did just an excellent job right before me talking about building up the reserves, and that is a very difficult problem. But I want to dig into one other item. Mr. Walseth mentioned it briefly, but the underlying fiscal impact statement for this bill is not wrong or misdone by the budget of management and budget. It is wrong because it is antiquated and needs to be updated, and it hasn't been updated. And because of that, you are relying on a local impact statement, which takes numbers from a study that was done in 2004, slightly updated in 2009. And what it tells you is that you're going to get savings in the neighborhood of $80 million a year, which is simply not going to happen. Mr. Chairman, my phone's off. But what this bill says is that if you take these districts and put them into a self-insured pool, you will save money because these districts will no longer be paying the MCHA assessments, the licensing fees, and the other fees that we have to pay as fully insured groups. They say that 13% of the districts were self-insured at the time those studies were done. Right now, it looks like 80% of the districts have taken those savings by already moving into self-insured. And those are districts like out in Representative Anderson's neighborhood, where Robbinsdale, Hopkins, Minnetonka, Wayzata have all moved to self-insurance since that study was done. Mr. Chairman and members, the bill doesn't give you the savings you're looking for. It doesn't solve the problems that the proponents have asked you to solve. And we would like to work with you to try and reduce costs in other ways that actually work and help people. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time for you and your members with their questions. I'd be happy to answer them, but I'm going to turn to Ms. Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Ms. Cox, welcome back to the committee.
Hi, I'm Barbara Cox, representing Health Partners. Health Partners employs more than 20,000 people in our health plan, clinics, and hospitals. I don't want to repeat either what the other testifiers have talked about, but I have a couple handouts that I think speak to a couple of these points. One is that there is a lot happening now in the insurance market in 2013 and 2014, and I have a document that hopefully a page can pass out that just talks about the number of changes that are coming. This would be on top of that, and we're a little concerned that with so much change happening at the same time that there may be some unintended impacts to all of those changes happening at once. Secondly, I want to talk a little bit about competition. Others have talked about it. I have an article here that I think is really impactful. In Wisconsin, and I don't pretend to be an expert on the Wisconsin school pool, nor am I saying that it's exactly the same as what the school pool will be, but after 20 years, districts in Wisconsin were allowed to competitively bid, go out for bid for their health insurance. And in the case of Hudson, which is just across the border, as we know from Minnesota, they were able to save $1 million a year on their health insurance. And I have an article about that I'm hoping we can pass out as well. You know, finally, I just want to make a point that hasn't been made yet, and that is we also have concerns about this bill because of the negative impact it will have on the rest of the fully insured market. When groups move to PEEP and no longer pay premium taxes or MSHA assessments, those costs are shifted to the rest of the individuals and employers that remain in the fully insured market. Please consider voting against this bill to preserve choice and competition.
Thank you, Ms. Cox. And next up, I've got Julie Sink and Sarah Lawrence. And finally, Ms. Kelleher from MSBA. If you'll just identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony. And welcome.
Good evening. I'm Julie Sink. I'm the Director of Business Affairs for Prior Lake Savage Area Schools. 2 years ago, our district was in the fifth year of budget cuts, and we were exploring options to reduce our expenditures. Our health care costs are 12% of our budget at $7.2 million. Our health care renewal came to the district 2 years ago with an increase of 3% and 5%, which you think may not be a whole lot, and granted, but it's $650,000 to us. And $650,000 of an increased expenditures at that time, after 5 years of budget cuts, we were seriously looking for places to find that money. And so we went back to our broker and asked, is there another way to do this? And he said, well, I'll go back and look. Well, he came back with a zero the first year and a 5%, which was still $400,000. We investigated the self-insured option. We were able to negotiate aggregate and keep our same aggregate level of benefits, negotiate our administrative fees and save $360,000. We negotiated our stop loss fees at $78,000, and we negotiated other provider discounts and our broker fees of another additional $355,000. We were able to save $793,000 by going self-insured. And we also were able to keep the margin, which is the difference between the premium and the claims to the premium and our claims and fees, and to help us build our reserves. In 1 year, we were able to build our reserves to $1.2 million. And what that did for us was to, over 2 years, not increase our expenditures, so we were able to not have to cut that year because we saved enough money to not cut in our district. And it gave us a controlled and predictable environment. It benefits our employees and the taxpayers in our district. Our insurance committee is able to review our district data and projections on our renewal costs on a monthly basis. It's very transparent to our employees. And it allows us to better manage any penalty and assessment that's due to the Federal Health Care Reform Act. We have unknown costs to go to a statewide plan. It could negatively impact our district budget, which we have so carefully strived to also be healthy. We really base our decisions on data and best practices. And the data that we're receiving does not allow us to make good comparisons at this time. And so that's a difficult thing for school districts right now to look at this plan and to make it. What you're forcing us to do with this bill is to opt out. And I think it's prudent for districts to have that choice. I've been lucky enough to work in districts of 700 students, 22,000 students, 3,300 students, and in Prior Lake we have 7,300 students. And none of them had the same plan, because none of the plans were the what was best for that particular district. None of them would have worked in their district. The ones they had, they carefully chose because it worked best for their employees and what was best for them, for their health, and for the district as a whole. And so we're asking you to vote down this bill and give districts choice.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your comments.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sarah Leverins. I represent AFSCME Council 65. We represent Greater Minnesota local government and nonprofit employees, including a significant number of bus drivers, school cooks, paraprofessionals, and secretaries, the lowest paid of school district employees. I'm here to raise some concerns and hope that we can work with you and other legislators throughout this process. We're a bit of a latecomer to this debate, but we'd like to be involved. And let me tell you the story of Kevin Dotson to tell you about our concerns. Kevin Dotson is a Park Rapids school bus driver. He is one of the highest paid bus drivers we would represent because he has the seniority to not only have a morning run and an evening run, he has the seniority to have a midday kindergarten run. Kevin, as one of the higher paid bus drivers, makes annually $21,756 a year. Let me repeat that. $21,756 a year. However, because of history and long time negotiating, they have 100% employer paid single plan. And then even more important is over time they have been able to negotiate that the employer will pay $1,000 a year into a health reimbursement account, and that now covers his out-of-pocket maximum. And when I look at the document comparing PEEP that was handed out at the Senate Commerce Committee earlier this week, the page which talks about the PEEP plan that is compatible with a health care savings account indicates that the out-of-pocket maximum for a single person is $5,000. So Kevin's getting $1,000 from his employer that potentially would go towards that. Obviously, the $1,000 won't cover that. Park Rapids does not have 1,000 insured lives, and they aren't self-insured, so they won't be able to opt out. All of this is very important to Kevin Dotson because 2 years ago he got a kind of pneumonia, and I can't pronounce it, I'm not even going to try, but it's a kind of pneumonia that most people who get it, the doctors can't say why. It can come from mold. It can come from mildew. It can come from bird poop, I'm told. Most people, they aren't able to say why they get this. When you get this, they put you on steroids. And either the steroids work or they don't. If the steroids don't work, like they didn't work for Kevin, your only option is a double lung transplant. Otherwise, within 3 to 4 years, you will die. That is what a diagnosis of this disease means. As I said, the steroids did not work for Kevin, so he was referred to the Mayo Clinic. The first visit where he met his pulmonologist, the pulmonologist said to him, "You are the first person I have ever met as a patient where in our first appointment we had to talk transplant." That was, of course, very scary to Kevin. When the doctors talked to him about a transplant, they told him it was going to cost $450,000. And that for the rest of his life, he would be taking drugs that at the current price cost $20,000 to $40,000 a year. Now, of course, Kevin's also going to be seeing the doctor a lot, so there will be those costs. He had his double lung transplant 10 months ago. He's doing very, very well. He's had a couple of incidents where they put the scope down in his lungs and they poked a hole in his lungs. He's had viruses and those kinds of things, but he hasn't had any rejection problems. He and I discussed the possible out-of-pocket maximums of this new program, and his response was that he could not pay those out-of-pocket maximums on his income of $21,756 a month. Can we negotiate with the school district to cover more of the out-of-pocket maximum? Of course. Is it going to happen right away? No. Is it going to happen in every school district? No. And so where does this leave Kevin Dotson and our other lower-income members? It leaves them sending me here to ask you to work with us on this bill to help them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Ms. Leverance. And the last testifier that I believe we have on the list is Ms. Gallagher from the Minnesota School Board Association. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I work for the Minnesota School Boards Association. You've had a very articulate night from school board members around the state and employees who have problems with this bill. And certainly MSBA has always opposed this bill. But I just want to call your attention to four pieces that really bother us. It's not the same old health insurance bill. This is a very different bill. First of all, the Labor Management Committee is comprised of 14 members. In the past, there were seven school board members and seven employees. That is now changed to a 4-9 or 4-10 split. Had to do my math today. And as such, really, it sort of questions whether management's concerns will be heard on this board, whether there'll be a fair discussion of issues and benefits going forward. Next, we have concerns about the reserve surcharge that over the next 3 years will be collected. We are very concerned. The bill sort of outlines where some of these reserves would come from, and very likely, I foresee a lot of legal challenges going forward. And the problem is what happens when everybody's fighting to retain what they've got is school districts get smushed in the middle. And we're really concerned that those surcharges over the next 3 years for schools could be huge. We did poll our members and say, how do you feel about the idea of something being irrevocable? 88% said they don't like it and they'd like the option to renew if they think they've got a good program. 11 were unsure. We feel that 1,000 insured lives, and we're not sure if that is family members or employee lives that covers, where that line would be. We have, just to say, smaller schools provide less insurance coverage truly isn't fair. You've heard from board members across the state today, of which have all done things to improve their insurance coverage. And last but not least, when we asked our members what you thought about this all, the overwhelming response was concern about the federal health care bill and how it was going to impact school districts in Minnesota and what it was going to look like going forward. And we're really concerned that you place two major changes to health care systems in the schools, and it's going to be problematic. And keep in mind, school districts cannot levy for these costs. These are costs we've got to find out of our general education budget. So we've got to make it work with that. Last but not least, winners and losers, they're always a part of this bill, but I do want to say there's faces on either side of the dime here. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll pause and take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. And actually, we've got, as I understand it, we're supposed to be on the floor at 5:30. my recommendation for members, I suspect folks have questions for people that are currently in the room. I don't know who's able to come back and who's not able to come back, but for members that have particular questions of people who've testified, if you could try to find those people as we get out of here, that would be helpful, so that in particular if you have individual questions. We are going to recess and we'll come back immediately, and we'll be in 500 North, which is my favorite room. It was literally the only room other than meeting in the parking lot. So we went back and forth in the parking lot for a while, but we'll be back immediately again. I say it one last time, immediately after session, not 15 minutes, not half an hour, but right away after session in 500 North. And thank you for your attention, and thank you to everyone who came out today. You may want to, if you want stuff, keep it in a pile or bring it with you or whatever, the because we are moving rooms. Good reminder.
It would be helpful if you got some information on what this truly means for the insurance customer. And then just overall, I'm a little concerned that, you know, and I look at the report that I'm going to talk about without the you're used to report as means that the employee
I think that we've been hard and we've been wrong about this, and getting more than that.
Member Madison has a large pool. And this basically it makes voluntary pool opt out option. And so we would be left with a pool that is not as large as 50 in order to have the state that we is able to do. I would ask you to vote no. That's math and intelligence.
least show us if there has been history of a mandatory program at state. Wisconsin? I mean, did Wisconsin already have a right program that was mandatory in the first place? Thank you. So how many school districts? It's my belief that, you know, there are about 220 school districts that are currently within a pool that are already out there working. And I guess I just don't really understand. I've got a pool that's Wilmer, Worthington, Marshall, Minyota, and other small schools that have combined together that already have 7,500 lives and still within their pool. And yet, when they get a quote from their master, 7,500, they still be hit.
Bearable, 20% reduction. We've got a list of about 90. Most of them did. The other thing that I must tell you is in northern Minnesota, we had a teacher in reserve who went up for a teaching at 44 years old. For haven't seen you. And 2 years later, when I talk I'm going up for a pizza again. And she said, why would you go up for a pizza? That you bring me, you call me, you test me, and go for a pizza. Why is it not? I bet you would be on the board. The law says, despite the board must be made up of school boards. I can also show you some other information. I won't go into it. We've got more information. I'll leave it at that. But education is sort of the teacher's union. 4-1. That's some real competition. And that was just an individual.
We were going to leave it at that.
Just relax.
We're trying to. We got a bunch of folks who kind of want to do it.
We've got Representative Anderson and Dellers and then
Mr. Chair, so
I'm done with you.
Well,
I can't even say your name, Vincent.
That's okay. Well, you just did. You did a good
one
job.
One more question, and then we're going to do Anderson and Dellers, and then we're going to wrap with Hoppy.
Okay.
And let's give him the final reaction and give Representative Lord the final word because he's like the author. And then we're going to do that amendment. So, Representative Kuczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Atkinson, I appreciate that. Earlier tonight, you testified that, you know, of those 300 school districts, that they're all by themselves, negotiating and trying to find insurance premium. You said that each individual school district's out there on their own. Technically, I believe that's not the truth, because they do have pools. They have groups of 7,500, over 200 school districts essentially working together on a program that they like. I would argue when it comes to school districts, have you all talked to our school district members, our school board members, who are elected officials? And what part that they play with this negotiation? And I when I'm busy with the folks that I represent, who are elected, have said that they would like to keep local control. And in your bill, Representative, you have that school districts with over 1,000 live bodies are allowed to at least have an option to opt out. It would be my wish, because I have small school districts who combine their efforts, that work hard, that try to do the best for their taxpayers, their employees, and others. But if they've already begun a pool, and they may have 7,500, they may have 1,500, they may have 1,100 within their pool, do you feel that they have the same rights as larger districts to have the potential to opt out of this program? Or do you feel that because they're small, because they've already tried to pool their efforts, that they don't deserve that right to opt out, or at least have a may rather than a shall in this bill?
Well, I just want to clarify a couple things, Mr. Chair. Representative Kuczynski, I think I got it right, maybe. When we were talking about, when I was talking about, 338 individual districts, I was talking about them negotiating individually with the board. And I think there's only one co-op in the state and school co-op. So they are all individual negotiating aspects as well. So I just wanted to clarify that real quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think what was worrisome to me, Ms. Oshwager, is your comment that basically you're throwing your young teachers under the bus and having them pay higher insurance costs than they maybe would have to pay if they weren't forced to be part of this insurance pool. I think that's just a little alarming. But that aside, what is worrisome as well about this bill for me, Representative Ward, is the fact that 15 people out of 2,900 people could decide the fate of what insurance and premiums that teachers pay. They are held hostage to possibly 15 people or even less than that. We had the folks from Mountview come out and really have a different targeting groups that are part of it, and you have some of those groups that are as small as 15 people. And yet their entire group is made up out of 2,900 people that you're talking about. And yet, if just one of those groups says, hey, we want to go into this and do this, all of them are tied to that and have no say in the matter. And I think that's just troublesome, and that's why I'd encourage members to support Representative Hoppe's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Ward, you your turn on the leash to walk this dog around the Capitol. You're a nicer guy at it, I tell you that.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. I appreciate it.
You know, it's still an ugly dog, and you got mange with this irrevocable trust deal. That's not. I mean, if it's a good idea, and if what, you know, as I was listening to Ms. Alschweiger testify, actually, you are making a heck of a case for not doing Representative Ward's bill. These school districts have been able to go out and get a better quote, get a better price. And to those, one of the folks that testified earlier who's been in school districts, you know, in the, you know, the low hundreds to 2,900, and in each case, none of the plans were the same. None of the plans actually had the same group, yet they were able to keep their costs down. And if it's such a good idea, you can't, I mean, this is worse than death and taxes. Once you're in for ever and ever, life, death, and beyond, or you're not in. And if it's not a good day, if you don't ever get one shot of getting in, and then you never get, it just begs the question of how, it's great, then why would you, if you don't opt in on the first time, and you never get back in. So I think Representative Hoppe's amendment is a good idea. I don't think it's going to improve it to the point where I'd be willing to support it, but at least you're going down the right road. But Mr. Chairman, I did want to let Mr. Walseth from the service co-op just get a couple of questions there that maybe not just really defend himself to correct the record, but I didn't think that's what I heard him when he was testifying, some of the statements that he made about the service co-op and how they were.
I
don't know if he was poised or if he was
anticipatory.
But
clearly poised. I didn't actually call on him. Anyway, Mr. Walter.
Well, we were thinking of life, Mr. Chairman.
But you're done now, right?
No. I'm getting it.
You've walked the dog.
I'm getting it.
Mr. Walter. You need to crank it. Voluntary people. Okay, that's point number one. You don't have to mandate people into the school meeting. Point number two, service cooperatives have regional rates. They get together and do rate settlement, settle ups at the end of the year. Keep does the same thing. In fact, Keep uses our model. They individually rate the districts as they know, and then over time, they start to blend the rates together to them. Do the same thing. And there's nothing preventing those local cooperatives if they wanted to go to a common rate comp plan system, the local members could decide. I just want to clear the record on a couple of those. I know it's all part of the way to get a lot of any pretty cooperatives, but our members, these are voluntary pools, and the employees have the right to own them. 90, they all shop for 95% of the state. Why do you have to force them into them? I think the voluntary approach is the right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 95% was what I was kind of, if it was such a bad idea, I thought that's what I had remembered. Representative Ward, I mean, you're a good guy and you're doing your job here, but this, you listen to the testimony, you look at the hard work that's done with in collaboration, not only at the bargaining table, not only with the individual members, but with the teachers and the staff themselves, and they are doing a good job of keeping those costs down. When they go out, and I won't ask Ms. Cox or any of the health plans to come up, I'm sure they would get the same thing, that working with the group, they're able to bring those costs down or keep those costs down. It's just when you force somebody into this, at one point we said 10% was going to be the reserve, and one of the other testifiers said 30 to 40%. I mean, that's $300 to $400 million in reserve, and if you're going to have to start paying it back, this isn't going to work. The money's not going to be there. So applaud you for taking up the mantle of the board, but supporting the Hoppe Amendment would be a great idea, but I don't think it's going to matter. I think it'll pass out of there. But don't take away that choice, but also don't disregard the good work that a lot of school districts, large and small, have done around the state, working together, unions, school boards, everybody all together, have done a good job of keeping those costs down. Don't mandate everybody else come down to the lowest common denominator level and, you know, in a way, some of the good work that a lot of people have done. So, thank you, Representative Ward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'll pass. I'm out of time.
Representative Hoppe, to your amendment. All right, Representative Ward, up to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Zeller's underestimated the power of my persuasion. Wrap up. I think we can pull this thing out.
I was actually going to vote with you, but Zeller's convinced me otherwise.
Representative Ward and Ms. Altschweiger, you both talked about competition. Board, your initial comments and said that this results in better bids. Altschweiger, you talked about competition and being mad at superintendents and school boards who didn't want the teachers to go out and look for other things. You know, I like competition. I think Representative Ward, the long-term result of this bill, without this amendment, the long-term result of this bill, teachers won't have competition. They won't have a choice. These teachers so, and I know that the people are going to be for a lot of our districts in the state, they're really going to be from the insurance perspective. So, with this amendment on there, I would support the bill. I appreciated working with you folks, and I really have in this role.
Again, members, that we're looking to create a larger school that we can, so I'd ask that you don't vote in the one. Thank you.
Can I make one final short comment? Thank you. saving if you didn't think I'd use it, but Representative Ward and members, this is a letter to me and others. And I will. But one of the things that the governor said is that he found it troubling that the legislature was the governor's going to be able to go that far, but just as a board, I truly do think that the line is going to be a competition in the new high cost.
Thank you, Representative Ward, and thank you to all the testifiers who stuck around. Next up,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome. Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman? Can you hear me now? Welcome to the committee, Representative Atkins. Would you like to move your bill?
I would, Madam Chair. I would move the House File 779. We refer to the committee on the policy.
Yes.
Madam Chair, there is an A1 amendment. An author's amendment.
A1 amendment.
A1 amendment.
A1 amendment.
A1 amendment.
Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, if you're going to use your delete everything amendment, you don't need it.
Would you like to vote on the 51 amendment?
And Madam Chair, in light of this, we're out of brief explanation of the my goal here was to deal out of the bill in its entirety is both the Affordable Care Act conformity measures as well as the market rules piece that we've heard referenced in this committee previous to tonight. Those two I'm sharing the Affordable Care Act conformity measures in a separate bill, and then the DD1 will be the remainder. schools today. Just for the purpose of disclosing, I understand that the bill will travel as one in the Senate. While it is traveling separately in the House, the two provisions will then be married up when it gets to the Senate. I just don't like to surprise people when you're... I don't want anybody to think we're doing anything. Chairman Huntley very much wanted to carry the Affordable Care Act and conformity measures to the Care Act. So with that, we will go to the DE1, and Madam Chair, I would they can do it in light of the hour. I know members have undoubtedly read it, but what I've got is the members here from the department, and I would, unless if there is even a single member that wants me to walk through the bill, I would be happy to do that. We'll have members of the department here. But otherwise, I think what I'd prefer to do is just some people that are concerned about the bill and then take them. So if there's even a single person who wants to walk through, I'd be happy to do that for the season. Obviously, taking out the least of the is there anybody that wants to walk through? Madam Chair, I'd be happy to go and take the testimony.
Do we want to adopt this amendment first and then take testimony?
Madam Chair, I believe that he's also just here. We've got he and Mr. Munson Gallant who are here to answer questions. These gentlemen are over here, but I think that they're just here to answer questions.
Let's go to Tyler Gray. Sue Abderholden.
NAMI was actually very supportive of the exchange because for the very first time mental health and substance use disorder treatment would actually be mandated to be covered. Any plan that is offered in the exchange has to cover it, and that has not been the case. There hasn't been a mandate for coverage for mental health. So we're very excited about that. Our concern is that we have huge barriers to accessing mental health treatment now. And under the exchange, we have even more people being able to access mental health and substance use disorder treatment because, of course, that one barrier, your insurance not covering it, will be gone. In the bill, while it does talk about primary care, mental health, and general hospital services must be available within 30 miles to 30 minutes travel time, there is then a waiver of that particular provision. And I have a handout here that actually shows you that every region except two in the state has been declared by the health department mental health professionals. So having this waiver in there, which frankly makes me a little bit nervous that we're not going to be able to access it. And then just looking at some of the information that quality of care is including, I think we want to look at so how are we doing in terms of around the country? And that email the authors saying we have some concerns and to bring them forward. So I just think we need to be a little bit stronger in there to make sure that if we finally get covered for the mental health treatment, that they can actually access the mental health
treatment. Go to our next testifier, Anna Olsgaard. Thank you.
We represent 15,000 healthcare workers in hospitals. Thank you for the opportunity to offer testimony on Section 9 of the Minnesota Health Act. These quality standards protect all consumers from inferior health insurance products. And second, the bill should help reduce the risk of adverse selection of the exchange by providing uniform regulatory standards inside the market. In particular, we support the provision in the bill that sets higher standards for network adequacy for all health plans. The bill does this by extending some elements of existing HMO access standards to the non-HMO commercial market, both inside and outside the exchange. This will help ensure that more Minnesotans have meaningful access to the health care. We also support the inclusion of rigorous quality reporting requirements for all health plans, since good data collection is foundational to quality improvements in our health care. We do believe, however, that the bill misses some critical opportunities to provide broader consumer protection in the health care market. And we also have a number of unanswered questions at this point as to whether the bill achieves the goal of minimizing adverse selection. First, it's clear that some of the provisions from the existing HMO access standards from Minnesota Rule 26.85 and 10 were included in the market rules, while others were not. Contract with or enforce the HMO standards of qualified providers of outpatient mental health services to meet the projected needs of all their enrollees, including making available services that are culturally appropriate. These standards are not included in the market rules bill, and we would ask that they be considered for inclusion. Second, the Affordable Care Act clearly recognized the importance of making pediatric dental coverage available to all families by including that coverage in the essential health benefits. We support the provision in this bill that requires limited scope dental plans offering that pediatric dental coverage to offer it on a guaranteed issue basis that is available to all plans. However, that those standalone dental plans offering the pediatric dental comply with the prohibition of pre-existing conditions. Federal regulations require this of all other services included in the essential health benefits, including pediatric dental coverage that is bundled with major medical benefits. However, a family that obtains pediatric dental essential health benefit through a limited scope dental plan is denied coverage of treatment for pre-existing conditions. The benefit is included in the essential benefit package. Clearly contrary to the intent of the major market reforms in the Affordable Care Act, and also clearly detrimental to those children most in need of pediatric dental services. We would ask that all the major market reforms that apply to the Essential Health Benefit Set apply equally to pediatric dental coverage offered through limited scope dental plans, especially the prohibition on pre-existing conditions. Last, we have some concerns about the provision in the bill that exempts carriers with less than 5% market share in Minnesota and offering products only outside the exchange from complying with the metal level mandatory offering until 2020. We're also concerned that this bill exempts from the exchange. We believe this will allow some carriers to specialize in offering minimal and unaffected coverage, contributing to the growing problem of under-insurance that is typically having of high or TPD full care coverage. Concerns about this for several reasons. Under-insurance is a and a stress on families, and it contributes to the level of uncomfortable care. This exemption may also raise premium prices for all products offered by larger accredited carriers by segmenting the risk pool between accredited and unaccredited carriers. And last, this presents an adverse selection risk against the exchange by drawing healthier individuals into low-cost, minimal coverage outside the exchange. It's important to keep in mind that carriers that have less than 5% market share in Minnesota aren't necessarily small carriers. They merely have a small share of the market. We think it's very reasonable to require all carriers to comply with the same market requirements, including metal level inventory offerings and accreditation requirements. In fact, we believe that requiring all carriers to play by the same rules is the overarching objective. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify on H.S.7.9. Although we have some concerns about the provisions in the bill, we strongly support the underlying goal of improving the quality of all insurance products in Minnesota and reducing the risk of adverse effects.
The Representative Atkins about the amendment. What the amendment does is it adds hospital or primarily children to the definition of potential community providers and care members. Whereas adults can go to any hospital, those hospitals all in the state are relatively few children.
Policy, maybe even the finance committee, and the committee one big room because I think it does kind of have that Venn diagram where there's considerable crossover. I support the amendment. We haven't heard the feedback from some of the health committee what they're going to say. But I think it would be worthwhile to have it in the bill so that it would have some sort of way to the next
Very quickly, I'd like to speak on opposition to the amendment. The amendment is trying to do is add a specification to providers and provider qualifications in this bill. Currently, the education of people is not my belief would be more appropriate to look at provider statute. And if there were a facility in the hospital including that statute, we would look at that.
Certain facilities as essential community providers, so this isn't kind of out of the mainstream of what's in CCQ.
Any further discussion to the amendment? If it's not, all those in favor, with the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Aye.
Oklahoma.
Representative Atkins, would you
Madam Chair, can I ask a couple of quick questions of the author or Mr. Bartsch or anybody that wants to? Representative Atkins, I guess starting on page one of the bill, when I started reading it, and I just highlighted a couple of the words when we're talking about the requirements on all health carriers, whether or not they're involved in the exchange. I don't know that this is something, I know this is still a work in progress, but I don't know that it's something that we even want to do or something that's even necessary. Can you shed a little light on your thought process there?
Madam Chair, I'm going to copy a little bit. First off, I want to make clear that this is not all about the exchange. The point of and the hope is that we do have minimum medication possibility that we collect. My sense is, quite frankly, because I've heard from both sides now, on the superior side and others on the provider, and others on the consumer side, some have said we've gone too far, some have said we've gone far enough. So I think the relative show a little bit of movement to do one direction or the other, and that's why I'm looking at I think Mr. Carter still has a few more comments tonight, and we're going to try to strike that something that makes sense to us.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I just highlighted a couple things that we sent to the bill. On page 3, all the way at the bottom, number or letter B under subdivision 2, a health carrier with less than 5% market share, and then it goes on to talk about, you know, in more detail, but I was struck by, I'm just wondering, are we running the risk of driving out the little guy?
Up to vacuum.
Madam Chair, real briefly, Representative Hopkins, in light of the hour, I think Ms. Odegaard kind of hit that on the head. There are some that may have a small market share, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're small. And quite honestly, to do business in Minnesota, you can't be really that little to begin with, or you wouldn't be able to meet the requirements of the Department of Commerce.
Couple more, thank you, Madam Chair. Next page on page 4, subdivision 5 enforcement, and then in section 7, the Commissioner of Commerce is mentioned twice. And I'm pro-commerce. I like having this kind of stuff in the Commerce Committee and the Commerce Department. I just want to make sure if we're talking about the exchange, if this is going to run into complications with MMB.
Madam Chair, Representative Hoppe, my understanding is that they've actually been conversing about this and that they do not anticipate running into problems in that area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going on to the next page, and I promise I didn't mark every page, but just some things that jumped out at me. Page 5, subdivision 2, line 5.3. Specific requirements. When it says any written marketing materials must include a statement of enrollee information and rights as described in Chapter 62D, and as we're all familiar with Chapter 62D, I'm just wondering how far that goes. I mean, if it's literally, if everybody has to put everything about every plan out on every piece of literature or flyer or frisbee that they put out there, I don't know how that's going to be taken or how that's going to apply.
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Hoppe, on behalf of all of the frisbee makers, to the extent they have to make larger frisbees, we support that. But I'd invite if folks have specific recommendations or thoughts in terms of what ought to be included. But I think it's important to share with us that if there's an annotator that still is the appropriate disclosure, that would probably be included in mind.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is my last one that I didn't get to the rest of the bill, but on page 6, subdivision 3, other health services, specialty physician services, ancillary services, specialized hospital services. I think Representative Portman's amendment touched on that a little bit. But I was struck by couple of things. One, in line 6.2, where it says 60 miles or 60 minutes travel. And then on 6.15, where it starts and it says covered services are available to all enrollees without unreasonable delay. I have met with some of the healthcare providers in outstate Minnesota. I don't know if this is workable, and it might be. I don't know that. I'd like to hear from maybe Mr. Barch or no one else in the audience is really nodding or anything. I'm just wondering if that's in greater Minnesota, if that's practicable.
I would too.
Mark.
Madam Chair, members. I believe the intent is that
thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Atkins. Just, I want to piggyback a little bit off of Section 10 in particular and the feasibility of all of that. Can you tell me what happens if waivers aren't granted? What is the enforcement method that Department of Human Services would use? Because we had a group here just earlier, Naomi, come up and talk about that they didn't like that there was a waiver process and that they gave out this map of the different mental health places that aren't covered in the state of Minnesota, which is pretty much the entire state. And I'm just wondering what happens if they say, nope, we're not going to grant you a waiver. What happens then?
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I think most everybody in the room probably knows Naomi Mansour-Igala. Treating friends. We recognize that the possibility is a relevant construct. If they can figure out a way to provide access to care in a way that seems to be the foundational requirement of making sure that network access to care, the goal of network access is to make sure people have access to care, we have been willing to have a discussion with them. I will note that part of our stakeholder engagement has been a release of filing standards for these network provisions as part of the exchange creation certificate process. And we sent out those standards, including what you do with the waiver on Friday. We're waiting for that from the plans on what are our questions create discrimination on their part, and to the extent that they provide feedback, we will continue to modify it. Modifying it.
Thank you. State your name for the record.
My boss, Master. Assistant to the Commissioner for the Department of Health.
Thank you. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief because actually a lot of the questions I had were already addressed by Representative Hoppe and Representative Anderson, but I guess too, I'll just direct this to Chairman Atkins, the author. I guess I'm still just kind of struggling with what problem we're solving and why this is necessary. It was my understanding, we didn't actually have to make some of these changes as a result of the Affordable Care Act. So can you just clarify for me, are some of these changes necessary to be in compliance with the ACA, or is this just additional?
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair and Representative Williams, perhaps Mr. Vandehey and Munson and Gollins helped put together doing are in fact the results of an opportunity to go much further and wider than we have to here. But in terms of where that right line is and what we've done, I think it's happened to do. I'll leave it to that. Mr.
Vandehey, would you state your name for the record and help us
yes,
out?
Yes, Madam Chair, my name is Tim Vandehey. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Commerce. Representative, when we looked at doing market rules, we were trying to provide the same consumer protection as well as ensure availability and comparability between products offered within the exchange as well as outside the exchange. We are, trying to encourage carriers to compete on quality as well as the affordability and the delivery of their health care to their insured versus competing on attracting the healthier enrollees to their plan. And so by having unified market rules both within and outside of the Minnesota insurance marketplace, that's hopefully the goal we hope.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that answer. Is that substantially different than what the Commerce Department and Insurance Commissioner currently does with regards to certifying plans for sale within the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair, Representative, there are certainly, the Department of Commerce has been focused on indemnity insurers, and so there are aspects within this market rules bill that apply a standpoint of HMO standards for network adequacy to indemnity insurers, but we have not applied those standards to people.
Representative Loon?
Thank you. And I guess just one final question slash comment regards to adverse selection. I think one key difference, at least in my mind, is, and I assume a substantial attraction for being in the exchange is that it's the only way to access subsidies to help afford your health insurance. So to be placing restrictions on some of the plans outside the exchange, I mean, isn't there a difference? If you are not receiving any kind of subsidy, but yet some of your choices are now going to be limited or changed for plans outside the exchange through this legislation, aren't you placing further restrictions on the ability of people to afford perhaps coverage without the subsidies if you don't qualify for the subsidies?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think that the premise that you're suggesting and that we're placing restrictions on insurers outside of the exchange, many of the or a few of the articles will actually require insurers to provide additional products to the market. So I would suggest that providing additional availability as well as comparability for insurers.
Madam Chair, I wondered if Mr. Barge would have any comments on this. I'd just like to hear a perspective from the insurers. Barge?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Jeff Barr from Medica. Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, I actually had some comments to make about the bill, but got caught answering a couple questions specifically. So if it's okay with you, I just have a few minutes of comments that I think would address some of the questions that have been raised by members.
All right, ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we didn't get an introduction to the bill, I think a couple opening comments about what the bill does The Affordable Care Act and the creation specifically of the health insurance requires a certain set of criteria
poor plans that want to be sold on the exchange in order to be a qualified health plan that certainly serves broad criteria specified by federal law, and then our state and the creation of a state-based exchange gets to set the specific QHC criteria for products sold on the exchange. In the exchange legislation that the House passed on Monday, that was going to be accomplished one of two ways. The first way would be to do it through this mechanism. When you pass a piece of legislation, and that high standard of qualification applies both to products inside the exchange and the products outside the exchange. The legislation you passed earlier this week says if you don't pass this bill, then the exchange board gets to create the criteria for the products sold on the exchange. I think that's some background that we didn't put in the opening. So one of the questions was, what happens if we don't do this? Then we give the exchange board the ability to set the criteria for the products sold on the exchange. We've had some good conversations with the department about this legislation, and again, trying to find a balance between the appropriate regulation and consumer protections without doing some undue and unnecessary burdens on the marketplace, particularly for carriers who don't have to follow these laws currently. As Deputy Commissioner Vandehay mentioned, there are indemnity carriers that don't follow a lot of the current HMO laws, that don't have the Department of Health as a regulator, and under this piece of legislation they would. And I know there's some concerns with them about that. Our biggest concern is something that's been raised already, and that's sort of understanding the overall need for the bill. And there's a few reasons why you would want to do this. The first is to address what is an understanding need or solve a problem within the existing marketplace with how we're currently regulating insurance. And I didn't hear the department's report suggest that there is an issue in the current marketplace that we need to address with additional regulation. So, you know, we have a network adequacy standard for HMOs. We don't for indemnity carriers. Ms. Averholden has a problem with availability of access to some care, but in terms of products out there that have sufficient network adequacy standards, I didn't hear the agency raise those concerns. Indemnity carriers aren't accredited with the required under this law. I haven't heard consumers raise issues with the fact that there isn't, all insurance companies aren't accredited. So I don't think this legislation is actually solving an existing problem with the products we have in the marketplace. The second reason to potentially do this is to mitigate some of the differences with products inside and outside of the exchange. And that issue kind of perplexes me if that's what we're trying to solve. A couple reasons for that. The first is the exchange bill that the House passed and the one that's moving through the Senate, in its design, is specifically set up so that the products in the exchange are different, that they are better. Representative Atkins and others have talked about wanting to have the best plans available inside the exchange and using that selection criteria to set aside and highlight the best plans. Well, by definition and design of the exchange, you don't want standardized products. I mean, we're designing an exchange to have better products. So I don't know that it makes sense for us to say, on the one hand, we want the exchange to be the best and the brightest and stand out in the marketplace, and then also say we want the marketplace to have all the rules and regulations in the same way. They seem counterintuitive. The other issue that's been raised is, do we need to do this in order to prevent adverse selection against the exchange? Adverse selection is a term that really doesn't apply to the exchange in the way it's commonly used with insurance. Adverse selection is a term that's used to talk about the health risk associated with an insurance pool. So my pool of people is healthier than your pool of people, so people like me better. My claims costs are less. We had that conversation. The exchange doesn't carry any insurance risk. It's not an insurance carrier, so the exchange itself can't be selected again. Insurance carriers who sell products in the exchange have to pool their risk inside and outside of the exchange. Adverse selection from a Medica product inside the exchange versus outside the exchange doesn't exist. If I operate inside the exchange and outside the exchange, it doesn't matter if all my sick people are inside and all my healthy people are outside. If all my healthy people are outside and all my sick people are inside, it's all spread together. So both sides get the benefit of that risk. And that's the same for every carrier. Every carrier would have the ability, if they're inside the exchange, to sell products outside. So the term adverse selection isn't, I don't think, appropriately used, at least in the way it's normally been used with insurance. There's no health risk, there's no death spiral risk associated with the exchange, because any carrier who offers inside has the ability to go outside and spread their risk. It just isn't the case. I think what the issue people are trying to address is products inside the exchange looking less attractive. are the requirements for offering products inside the exchange onerous enough so that the products inside look less attractive and are less affordable than products outside? Can you sell something cheaper, leaner, meaner outside? It's not an adverse selection issue. That's an attractiveness and affordability issue. It might be a real issue. I would say that the benefit of the subsidies sort of mitigates that attractive issue, but that might be a real issue. My concern is if you're trying to solve for products in the exchange looking less attractive and being less affordable, you shouldn't solve for that by making every other product look less attractive and less affordable. You shouldn't raise the bar to the point at which consumers don't like it. You should find a way to bring that bar down so that all products look more attractive and more affordable. That brings me to the third reason why you would want to do something like that, and that is to try and provide a consistent level of regulation across the marketplace for different carriers in China. Our goal is to continue to work with the department to try and find it. But the way the bill is currently drafted, it's sort of taking the highest bar possible, whether it's a certification criteria or regulation, or applying that to everyone or dozen of these today. Our hope is that we can continue to have conversations with the agency so that if we have some standard rules, they're not overly burdensome on the marketplace. They continue to provide the consumer protections that we need, but don't do so at the expense of consumers and consumers' affordability. Thank you, Madam Chair, for indulging me.
Thank you very much. That was a lot of information. Representative Loons, is that answer? Yeah. Your question? All right. We have Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Atkins, when I first saw House File 779, I thought perhaps we would maybe see some of the language that would describe to us maybe the verification process and the active selector language that your bill in House File 5 would set up, saying the legislature or the board would set that up as the legislature. We can do that this session. Don't see it anywhere in this DE. I don't think it's there. I don't know if perhaps maybe it's in the other bill that Representative Huntley is carrying, but just wanted to get your comments. Is that language defined? Is it coming down the pike?
And thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Sanders. There's, keep in mind, we've got a base Department of Commerce standard. We then have the ability for the board to set the certification requirements. I expect the board to do that, and of course their rulemaking for it. And then finally, within the bill that passed to the House, that passed in the Senate tomorrow, I would expect to set out further direction with respect to how and whether there will be a number of how that would move forward. There is I'm blanking on the section in the bill, but there are certain criteria that have been set out against which the board is required to measure in making the extent it would be a advertising public benefit. So the active selector
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Atkins. I appreciate that. I also appreciate Mr. Barsh's comments on this. I do struggle with some of the need for this bill and would ask for a roll call.
Representative Budinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this first question I have to would go to probably Mr. Barsh or whomever. So if I've got a young, healthy, working family in my district, with this bill, if it's passed, would this make insurance potentially more expensive or less expensive?
Representative Atkins.
I think that was directed to Mr. Barsh.
Oh, Barsh.
Madam Chair, Representative Spadinsky. Let's start by backing up reminding everyone that there are certain changes in insurance products, regardless of where they are, that are going to take effect with the Affordable Care Act in terms of the benefits that are required to cost sharing and everything else. The family's going to be impacted by that. There is the potential for this legislation to require network design that families are potential additional administrative costs that are passed on long term. The inability to buy a product from a provider that's nearby that's not in the service area. So the way the language is currently written, we do have some concerns that it will impact insurance premiums outside of the exchange, and also create some inflexibility in the marketplace in terms of product creation.
Thank you. And this question kind of goes to another portion of what was said earlier. Kind of the governor talked about in State of the State address wanting to address issues of duplication when it comes to regulation and oversight. Do you feel this will add regulation and oversight and duplicity by having some different oversights within different areas of government, or will that lessen it?
Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, yeah, I would certainly say that the bill currently written would add to a lot of regulations, particularly to some carriers who don't have that today. There's also we've tried to identify these areas with the agencies, and they've stated to us that there is duplicative regulation. They'd like our comments on it to try and prevent that from happening. Obviously, additional regulations.
And then one more. So, how do you suppose this is going to? How do you expect? I was talking Southwest style there for a little bit, but how do you expect this to impact plans? And then, how do you feel this will impact business when it comes to actually being able to afford and then pass those costs on?
Madam Chair, Representative Zinsky, I'm one of the big guys in the marketplace. Medicare is one of the biggest for commonly not loving one of the and so for us, yeah, there's a lot of additional costs. It's some hassles in terms of what we're doing, but I'm probably more likely to be able to absorb that and pass less of it on, less of the cost of that on directly. Doesn't mean that we doesn't. I'm a big guy. I'm able to sort of swallow that redundancies. I think what this does do is it really does put some limitations on smaller carriers who are in our marketplace. There are some small guys here who are just small. It makes it difficult for them to continue to operate and want to operate. I think the other thing it does is I think it just puts a real big fence around Minnesota as a place where carriers who already don't want to look into business here have not been to look into business here. So, I mean, I guess part of it would say it's a good thing because there's lots of mainland carriers who aren't part of the market, but I tend to believe that competition would be
I guess my question would
think that
would probably just from the carry of the bill, Mr. Atkins, when it comes to just some of the things that he spoke about, really the looking at trying to affect the market and what's being offered on the outside of the exchange to make it, I mean, the testifier essentially said potentially make it look a little unattractive so that things within the exchange maybe look a little more attractive. Do you agree with that? Do you think that that's a proper assertion, or do you disagree with that, I guess?
Representative Atkins.
And Madam Chair and Representative Kuczynski, I think, and I appreciate the tone with which Mr. Barks expressed those concerns, because I think if it was that bad, folks would be standing on the table of the elements. I'm not suggesting that he is misrepresenting in any way. I just don't think it's quite as bad as folks might perceive it to be. If anything, there's in the bill itself, there's an ask of carriers to provide more products, not less, to enhance competition and make it even more robust. And to some degree, whether it's attractiveness of products inside the exchange, I think it goes beyond that. It's truly an adverse selection situation, because the product being sold inside the exchange versus outside the exchange, it may be the same product inside and outside, but it's not the same pool that's in that particular product. And to the extent that whether it's attractiveness or whatever it is that may draw people to that, if you get bad risk inside and people are buying these plans, and eventually those plans go broke because all they have are bad risk, I don't care what you call it, it's going to be a failure. So there is an effort to just try to balance, make sure that we've got the similar rules in and out. Those, I guess, would be kind of sum up my comments. But I do, I appreciate all of the comments, not just Mr. Bartsch, but we've got a representative from SEIU that we're trying to balance and make this bill as good as we can.
Any other questions? I don't see any hands, and I don't have anyone left on the list. Well, Representative Atkins, would you like the last word?
You got it. I'd renew my motion that House File 779, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy.
And a roll call has been called, so the clerk will take the roll.
Atkins?
Aye.
Fritz?
Yes.
Coffey?
No.
Anderson? Ansel?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Falk?
Aye.
Calverton? Hillstrom?
Yes.
Portman?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Lilly?
Yes.
Moon?
No.
Anders?
No.
Jones? Sundian?
Yes.
Sudzinski?
No.
Zeller?
Nope.
Keith.
Sorry.
Sorry. All right, members. The vote is 12 yes and 7 no. The bill is passed and will be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And before we adjourn, just a little roadmap for next week. For members and those who might be interested in what we're planning to do next week, we've got deadline week next week. I will remind members that I gave as many days off in this committee as we possibly could, and I hope you'll remember that with fondness as we plow through next week. We've got a little longer day planned on Tuesday and Wednesday and some significant bills up. You may see us a little bit in our Senate counterparts. If you get a chance to poke them a little bit, I don't think they're carrying as much in terms of meeting first deadline with some bills. So if you see a senator, tell them to do a little bit more on their end. We do have a number of bills that are trying to meet first deadline, so it's going to be kind of a heavy week, and I appreciate your patience next week. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are adjourned, members.